You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
I'm Jamie Dumont.
I'm Rob Russo.
I'm Jennifer Simard.
And this is
The Fabulous Invalid.
So what, let's start with Eric. Who's your favorite puppet?
My favorite one, one of my first words was Kermit the Frog, but I think it was like Ermit Og. Just Kermit. Be it my mother. Yeah, so Kermit, I guess.
Your favorite puppet?
My favorite is Janice in the band.
She's good.
I just remember, I think it's the Great Muppet Caper where everyone's talking in a group and everyone cuts out except her. And I'm going to paraphrase, but she's like, and I said, Mother, if I want to live in a nudist colony, that's my business, okay?
If I want to walk on a beach naked?
If I want to walk on a beach naked, it's my business, okay? No one's talking. She's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know what's better, your Janice impression or Rob's.
Oh, Rob's.
Rob's is pretty good. Do
Rob's
the beach
good.
Again. Oh, yeah. I know my Muppets. Janice is my second favorite after Fozzie Bear.
Fozzie Bear.
I mean, that, okay.
Talk about the heart of the show, right?
I mean, come on, Bear.
When they say pets look like their owners, like you almost look like your Muppet, right? Like, I mean, that didn't quite come out right.
You could not have paid me a higher compliment.
That's the highest compliment.
Yeah, there is something very Fozzie Bearish about you. Yeah. Okay, Aaron, who's your favorite Muppet? The Muppets are puppets that were popular on television in the 70s and 80s.
A few spin-offs include Fraggle Rock.
Aaron doesn't want to answer. Apparently, Aaron doesn't know who the Muppets are. I was joking when I explained
the Muppets right now.
Well, I'm constantly explaining things to millennials that they should know and don't know, and Aaron didn't actually know who the Muppets are.
I know they are.
Yeah. What's your favorite Muppet, Jamie?
Scooter. Who?
No. Well, this goes back to everything I've been saying to you this week. Janice, of course.
Janice.
Oh, wow. 100%.
Little Janice caucus here.
I love Janice. And I do love Beaker. Although, I will say Beaker's another great
I do love Miss Piggy, too, though. Something about her is pretty...
Oh,
who? Like, Miss Piggy.
Yeah.
Piggy and Kermit are in their own, like, stratosphere. Yeah. Like, they're almost in their own.
She's a
my
gay
favorite.
Icon.
She is a gay icon. But I remember my favorite Miss Piggy moment was the late great John Denver was hosting. He was on, and he was always wearing those glasses.
Yeah.
And she says to him, she's like, "Oh, Johnny, please take off your glasses. Take them for moi, please, take them off, please." And he takes them off, and of course, he looks so different without your glasses. And silence, and she says, "Put them back on."
It's time to get things started on the most sensational, inspirational, celebrational, motivational. This is what we call
the Eric is the author of 26 Pebbles, which had its world premiere at the Human Race Theater Company. The play was featured in American Theater Magazine, The New York Times, and won the Kennedy Center Citizen Artist Award for 2017. Eric was in the original Broadway company of On Your Feet and recently completed a run at Houston's Theater Under the Stars playing Judd Fry in Oklahoma. Welcome, Eric.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi. Thanks for coming.
Welcome, Eric. So before we get into the nitty-gritty, we like to start with some easy-breezy questions, and we'd like to ask you, what relaxes you?
What relaxes me? Well, this wine right now is relaxing me, actually. aside from white wine, what relaxes me? I love walking. I'm a big... It takes a serious weather pattern for me to not walk around New York City. To me, it lets me think. It's an easier way, working out, too, sometimes, just to process, de-stress, open thoughts up.
My husband always says your most reliable mode of transportation are your two legs.
Oh my God. It's my favorite. It is rare for me to pop underground or on something if I can just hoof it, because I really love to walk this.
Are you an earphone wearer or no?
Yes, it depends. I do love to provide a soundtrack for my day sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of Ella Fitzgerald going on right now. Something about, winter, New York, autumn, like... It's screaming Ella, so I have her right now currently in my ears. But a lot of podcast listening, like, you know, and I'll show up wherever I am, either if it's a political one, irate, or if it's something like this show in a great mood and feeling like I've been a little, like, voyeur on these cool conversations.
Love that.
I would say stick to Ella.
Thank you.
Oh, please. My favorite thing to do is to listen to Philip Glass while on the subway. Try it sometime.
Does it like time out?
It's
like
so confusing.
It's really quite.
The doors open like a boom. Yeah, and
a staggeringly beautiful play called 26 Pebbles, which is about the Sandy Hook school shooting, mm-hmm. in which 26 students and teachers were killed. Can you tell us a little bit about how that whole play came to you and why you felt the need to write it?
So the impetus came before the play, obviously, and the impetus came from, I don't know if we all have that moment. I think maybe now in 2018 and what's happening in this country, we're having a lot more of these moments. But I was sitting there watching what happened. I remember the day of, I was so shocked. I just could not believe that we were in a country that 20 little children, these weren't, I'm not deflating anything, but these were 5, 6, 7-year-olds, little tiny babies, were blown away by an assault weapon. You know, and 6 people that were there to teach the next generation were decimated by assault weapons, and that we lived in a society that did this. And I remember that night I was catering, actually.
And God for me.
I forgot who it was. It was a holiday party. And I had, this girl was walking up, and I was still so shaken by all of it. I remember she like walked up, and when she was texting on her phone, she had her drink. She was like, "Can I get a vodka soda?" And I was like, "Cool," and just, you know, totally ignoring me, as you know, like that, and that. And then I was like, "I'm sorry, we're all out of vodka." She was like, "How can you be out of vodka at a party like this?" And like walked off. In that moment, I don't know what it was about that, but I was like, 26 people were killed today in this horrifying manner, and our biggest concern is like a glass of vodka. Yes, we have to keep things relative, and yes, the world spins on, but my God, it had been 6 hours, you know. And I thought, do we turn the page too fast? Do we just like compartmentalize too much? So it sat on me and it sat on me, and I watched as legislation turned to nothing. You know, President Obama tried to no avail in the end, nothing happened. And then at about the 4-month mark, I started thinking about, you know, I should go up there and I don't know what I'm gonna do. And I called my agent at the time, I'm like, "I'm going to Newtown." He's like, "Why?" And I go, "I don't know. I'm just going. I'm an artist. I have a voice, and I'm going up there." He's like, "To do what?" And I go, "I do not know. I don't know, but I want to do something. I don't know what it is." And so I met with some friends, and I said, if I were sitting at people and asking, I want to talk to people and have them release some of this. I bet you they're feeling, you know, horrible and the outer community, because the families are being taken care of in a certain way, but it's a hard thing, and I'll get to this in a minute, about when something targets you gun violence-wise in your community, you are also experiencing a death. A lot of people felt a weird, deep shame in expressing their sadness and expressing their feelings. Their biggest thought was, "I didn't lose anybody, so why should I feel sad? Why should I be upset? It's not fair for me to have these feelings," which from the perspective of looking into it, you're like, that's absurd. Of course you should have these feelings. We all have feelings, you know, like these, and we all, or your community was put in the news under the most horrifying thing. It's the death of a certain part of your community in a certain way. You know, you have that horrifying mark nobody wants, you know. And then 20 minutes after I met with her, I got a phone call from her, and she's like, "I have 2 friends that want to meet you." It was such a good experience for me. And then 2 friends became 6, became 8. And then what I thought would be a week trip ended up being 3 weeks coming back and forth. And I met 60 people and did 60 interviews, or about an hour and a half each. Wow. People, by the second trip, somebody gave me their home. They were on vacation. They didn't know me. But their friend said what a great experience it was, and they literally gave me their home. Like, I drove to a house with a key under a mat, and I was in a random person's home with no one home. People would watch my dog. When I was out doing this, they were cooking meals for me. They were, and I was, we were having group meals at restaurants and all getting to know each other. I went there and helped them sort the mail so I could be a part of their experience, because they had received 700,000 pieces of mail for a small town like Newtown. That was ridiculous and insane and a beautiful gesture of love, but an undertaking when you don't really have a town hall. There's no real mayor there. It's a, you know, I think a town councilwoman. Mm-hmm. So I went there and helped with the Boy Scouts go through some mail, just kind of get myself immersed in it, and then took all that, had some dear, dear friends. If you're listening, I love you so much for this. I paid them, you know, what I could, and they transcribed it all, because I'd still be here transcribing, I think, right, years later. And then I had these binders full of interviews and just went there and just started finding connections among people and highlighting certain things that stuck out. And then the next thing I know, it was all becoming an arc. And I go, oh, this matches here, this matches here. It was truly a puzzle. And then you start seeing whose stories start interweaving. So you go from 60 to 40 to, you know, and then by the end, by the time we have the world premiere and then the published version that's out there, there are 19 characters played by 6 actors that switch.
See, I'm too busy singing songs about my daughters and the news I have to hide from them today. I'm too tired from reading stories about slaughters in some little town a half an hour away by some kid who looks a little like your son. So I can't sing a song about your gun, sir.
You mentioned community a moment ago, and you start the playoff by actually forming a community. So you have the audience who are wearing name tags introduce themselves to each other.
Correct.
Which is a really hard thing to do when you think about it, right? It's a very simple thing, but to turn to your neighbor who's oftentimes a stranger and say hello is harder than it sounds. And I've done it. I've been in your play, and I've done it, and I'm not good at it myself. What I think is so interesting is that the play is about community, mm-hmm. and so it's incredibly important that you start out by forming a community with the audience members, and it really brings everybody into what they're about to share with the actors on stage.
Yeah, you have a... I mean, I think initially the recovering Catholic in me always loved the, you know, that, oh my God, I remember what my parents would kill me right now. That part where you, you know, you turn around and like you shake the hands of your neighbor. Mm-hmm. Anybody else raised
peace
Catholic?
Be with you.
Oh, I think yeah. peace be almost with
you.
All of us.
Peace be with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, peace be yeah. with you. Yes, yeah, so you shake everyone's hand, peace be with you. I always thought I was like, yes, a break in this monotony. Like that and like the and the communion were the two, like, I was like, okay, I'm going to get a little bite and we're going to have the peace offering.
Here. I would always fall asleep during the homily.
Of course.
On cue, I would put my head
absolutely.
In my dad's lap.
Are you Catholic too?
Oh, yeah, I was raised
so
Catholic.
We're all
yeah.
Catholic.
We're all Catholic.
This is a Catholic podcast.
It's like
know.
We're in Chicago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got that confirmation name.
Oh, yeah.
Eric Michael Lawrence, yo. St. Lawrence, guys.
You know, I chose Bernadette for obvious reasons.
That's amazing. See, I didn't have that option.
No, Bernadette Peters. I was like, they think it's that Bernadette, but it's not.
Oh, my God, I love that. No, mine was a saint that, the saint that when he was burned at the stake, he said, can you turn me over, please? This side's done.
Oh, my God.
And I thought that was so
kinky.
Genius and funny that he's bringing lines that turn me over, this side's done. And I went, that's my kind of humor. St. Lawrence, I got your name for life now. But to go back on that, there was a...
That was a fabulous segue.
I know. I told you I'm energetic. There's that moment where you break and you... are forced to turn around and do what we're told, you know, in churches about community and all that stuff. And we have to force a community there and turn around and meet people and meet your neighbors. And to me, it was so important to trust everyone around you, because you are going to go on a journey through this play. You're going to go through some feelings and you're going to have emotions. You will be crying, I'm sure, at some points. So you kind of want to trust those around you so that you don't feel uncomfortable about emoting, you don't feel uncomfortable about laughing. And the biggest thing, too, was to, when you're writing a play that has to do with 26 people being gunned down in a school, which is the impetus of the play and that. But really, it's a play about the community and dealing in the aftermath and the idea. I always say it's a story of hope and community because it really is. That's what it's about. You try to find the best ways to engage an audience to feel safe in taking in these messages and listening. And I think that was the most important part of the community.
And I think it's very successful. I think it's also, not to be a bummer, but I think it's also important to know some of the facts because as of the taping of this show, and granted, we're taping this a little bit earlier than it will air, so these numbers could even change in the matter of a couple of weeks. But so far, there have been 307 mass shootings in America to date this year. Let that sink in. Today is the 319th day of 2018, and there have been 307 mass shootings so far. That's astounding.
Yeah. And you know, and the saddest thing is that it is so very preventable, and for some reason, we can't get the message across that. I always say this is an epidemic. That's a term we all call it because it is an epidemic. It is something that is happening too often, too frequent. Too many people are dying from it. The mortality rate down the list, one of the top ones now is gun violence. That is insane.
What a wonder is a gun. What a versatile invention. First of all, when you've a gun, everybody pays attention. When you think what must be done, think of all that it can do. Remove a scoundrel, unite a party, preserve the union, promote the sales of my book, ensure my future, my niche in history, and then the world will see that I am not a man to overlook. Ha-ha!
Now, with that comes something very important. Yes, gun control. We have to have gun control. It is, to me, it is astounding that somehow the messaging has been so skewed by people that are only in it for monetary interest and to make money off of death that simple gun control changes everything.
I like when you do hear military personnel saying those very things that you don't need an AR-15. I know what those do. I know what those are. I also think, yes, the Second Amendment's very important. I'm all for it. But when you have ads that leave out the very important language that they always seem to cut out, and I'm sorry if I'm getting this wrong, but a well-regulated militia, well-regulated. You can't pick and choose
Correct.
Your facts. You can't pick and choose. That's in there as well. And we can do better to regulate.
Yeah.
I don't think I have to say it more than that. But
no, it's pretty clear. Well, but I think you have to say it over and over again because people don't know those words.
Right.
I think it is
right.
important.
Well, but it's also interesting because, and I'm sure you've obviously encountered this in your own research for your play, that by and large, the vast majority of Americans support common sense gun violence protection, right? Prevention measures, right? I mean, it's like up and down the board. Jamie, you have some stats here. 94% of people want background checks. 92% of people favor adding those with mental illnesses to the federal background check system. 82% favor raising the age from 18 to 21.
That right there is staggering.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? 18 years old.
Right.
It just seems
also,
too
these
young.
Numbers, I mean, 94% of American
you can't
people
have
don't
a drink
agree on
yet.
Anything.
You can't have a drink yet, but we can hand you something that will kill somebody?
Right.
Are you kidding me?
And our forefathers, you know, they did a really good job when they set up all these rules here in America. there was no such thing as assault weapons.
It was a musket.
They were allowed, right.
Exactly. Yeah. It took you, 20 minutes to, pump that thing back up?
Right.
It wasn't...
a very different thing. But I think it goes back to what you were saying, Jennifer,
yes.
which is that's why the language in the Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia, with the idea that things change.
The play itself, 26 Pebbles, has actually nothing to do with gun control. At all, it gives an audience because everything in the play is from the actual interviews. Every word you hear, everything you hear is from the interviews. Obviously, chopped up and made into a narrative, but it's people's actual testimony and words and of this community. And it's to me, it's more about spending 90 minutes in a theater, seeing a town deal with something like this, that I think is even more powerful than sitting watching the news and hearing about these horrific gun shootings, because for 90 minutes, you're in this really amazing thing called a theater that you can't turn off.
Right.
And you can't click the channel. You can't say, oh God, it's too much, and mute it. You gotta sit there and you experience it. And you go through it and you ride with them and you watch people that you have grown to love just in personality from what you've known in 15 minutes, frantically searching for their son or daughter. And then you watch a community deal with it afterwards, and the questions they have, and the fact that they all start thinking, was it us? Did we have a big stake in raising someone like, you know, Adam Lanza? Is it our fault? You know, fault and handling all those things that we don't know about, because once the story is over on the news, unfortunately, they're so frequent now that it's over. They unplug the cameras and they go, so we never see 6 months after where this play takes place. And the play doesn't end with any kind of like we did it, because that's not reality. It ends with like, what do we want us to be known for? What do we want to? What are, you know? I left the last words in the play. I left to them, and the phrase was, you know, I asked them, if you could pick one word, what word would you want Newtown to be known for? Because in my opinion, the last word should be left to them to put out there. You know, because they were Newtown before, and they're Newtown afterwards, and they have this mark now on them, but they sure gave me a sense of hope when I was there about how to survive something that seems insurmountable.
Do you know what's worth fighting for? When it's not worth dying for, does it take your breath away and you feel yourself suffocating?
You know that out of the 60 interviews, you know how many people blamed Adam Lanza for what happened? Zero.
Wow.
Not one person. There were a few that were his mother. You know, they were furious, didn't know what was she doing with all those guns in there and all this stuff. There were a few that had problems with the father, saying, why didn't he check in on the son and the mother? If he knew there was issues going on, why would he abandon the son there? You know, people, again, talk about what they don't know because they're not in the walls, they're not in the house, they don't know what's happening. But I would say that 80%, when I said, one of the questions was, tell me your thoughts on Adam Lanza. Do you fault him? And they went, no, it's our fault. 80% of them, it's our fault.
That's incredible. Here, this is... I have more facts, and I have to write them down because everyone knows I'm terrible with facts. But the contents found inside Adam Lanza's home, a metal bayonet, three samurai swords, a rifle, a pistol, articles on the 2008 shooting at Northern Illinois University, and a check from his mother for the purchase of his next firearm. He was 20 years old.
Isn't that crazy? They went into his safe, and he had a Christmas card from his mom, and had a check inside for his next gun, and she was the first one he killed. You know, and she just, you know, and you have to kind of think, like, I don't know, I'm very empathetic on things. I think when people say the term, like, oh, those monsters, that is the most infuriating thing in the world to me. I don't care if they are someone that does a mass shooting or a terrorist and something. Right away I go, when we say the word monster, we have defeated every chance of finding out more about this and preventing it in the future. Why? Why are they a quote-unquote monster? What brought them there? What made them this? What got them to a point there? What drives a person to strap on a bomb to their chest and walk into a market and blow themselves up? What makes someone get there? What makes somebody go into a school and kill 20 children? You know, so... And then you start thinking about, like, I know, you think about his mother, and I'm like, I don't know what would I do? You know, I'm alone with my child, and I don't know, and we find a common bond, and that we like to go out to the range and go shooting, and it seems innocent, and it seems okay. You know, I don't think any mother ever thinks their child's going to pick up a gun and go, you know, and kill them and then go kill, you know, 26 people in elementary school.
But what 20-year-old needs three samurai swords, a bayonet, a rifle, a pistol? I mean, that's a huge
there's an arsenal there. Yeah.
Flag.
Yeah.
To me, I'm not as compassionate.
No, I'm not. Listen, I'm not, and I'm not defending it. I'm just saying I think sometimes that there is, you know, what someone can confuse as like a common bond and feeling a moment where we have a middle ground for my son who has, you know, some mental issues going on and is an isolationist and does not leave his room. You know, we found something that gets him out of his room. We can do this. And I think exactly like anything with time, it expands and becomes something that was once safe, becomes toxic and then deadly. You know, much like maybe like, you know, addiction in a certain way. Right. You know, something that seems like, okay, then gets bigger, and the next thing you know, you really have a major, major problem.
Well, I'll tell you something, while not calling the person monstrous, the behavior that's monstrous. I find the behavior monstrous that legislation did not significantly change after Sandy Hook. And if we as a society say the murdering of 5 and 6-year-olds is okay, and we rubber stamp that and continue to ignore it by, you know, turning a blind eye and voting for people who are not going to change the legislation, then I believe that is monstrous. No. I, as a society, I don't. To me, that was the bar, Sandy Hook.
I completely agree.
It.
Yep.
Yeah, I think and it's the bar for a lot of people.
Right.
And you include in the play a very striking quote from the president at the time, President Obama. He said, "For those of us who remain, let us find strength to carry on and make our country worthy of their memory." And so many days since that happened, I've sat back and thought, you know, we're not worthy of their memory, right? What are we doing?
We're worse, right?
I mean, I was in such a dark place around the issue of guns before the 2016 campaign, and I saw a glimmer of hope in that for the first time ever in a presidential campaign, Democrats were talking about gun control in like a positive way, like this is something we need to do in an affirmative way. And, you know, the mothers of the movement, all these mothers who have lost kids to gun violence, African-American mothers came together and, you know, became this political force. And then
one got elected in Georgia.
Lucy McBath was just
elected
to
Congress. She lost her son, and she was elected.
Jordan Davis, yeah.
I mean, another glimmer of hope is that we, this past midterm election, more gun control advocate candidates won than those who were fighting against it. So we're seeing a turn. I think
we're moving closer.
People have had enough. People are realizing, oh, I think one side is perhaps lying to us and telling us the big bad monsters take away your guns. And people are realizing, wait, they're not taking away our guns. They're just trying to not have us be killed in our insert yoga studio, movie theater,
right.
Country Western Bar and Grill, concert, school. Mm. What else? Video game championship.
Right.
I mean,
literally anywhere.
Anywhere. If you can get killed in hot yoga, you know, like, really, we're not. Right. You're right, like you said. What kind of society are we?
You can't talk to a man with a shotgun in his hand.
Shotgun.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
David Hogg, who's one of the Parkland students, tweeted the other day, imagine saying the answer to shark attacks is more sharks.
Yeah.
Right? Putting more sharks in the water is going to solve shark attacks. Right? When you put it like that, it sort of just shows the absurdity of that argument.
Aren't those kids amazing?
Oh, they are.
They are
so
outstanding.
They really are the hope of the future.
Right. Well,
right?
America has been changed time and time again by the youth.
Yeah.
You look in history, it's the youth.
Oh, yeah.
They save us.
And the thing that struck me about, you know, because I used to say if Newtown couldn't do it, nothing could, in terms of rallying the country. And I think that was probably, you know, far too extreme, because obviously it has made a difference in changing the culture. But the Parkland students, I think, because, you know, these are the kids in Newtown were 5, 6, 7 years old, right? The kids in Parkland are 17, 18 year old peers, right? Who, forget the adults, they went right to the media, right? And they were able to speak on behalf of their fallen peers in a way that the kids in Newtown couldn't.
No.
Because they're children. They're
correct.
Literally babies, you said. You
they're in shell shock, too. They had no, you know, 7 year olds don't have words for this.
Right.
Their parents could go
they?
There, but.
How could they?
I get excited. Sorry.
And so it fell to their parents in Newtown who just lost children.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how could you ever wrap your head around mobilizing for a nationwide, you know, march when you're burying your child?
They
right?
always say they sadly experienced two deaths because their child died, and soon after it became the gun control debate. And right. so there was still your child died, but you were holding on to a glimmer of hope that things were going to change in honor of your child who died.
Right.
And so your child was, yes, buried, but you still had this hope, and hope keeps you going. And then the government says, no.
No.
And so they actually experienced two deaths.
Yeah.
I get very excited by David Hogg and his peers when I hear him. The best defense is a good offense. And I love how forward-thinking he is. Mm-hmm. And I'm paraphrasing some of his tweets. But the general idea is, listen, we're going to outlive you and we're going to outvote you. You know? And,
yeah, absolutely. I love that.
And,
can I have that on a T-shirt, please?
You know? Yeah, I'm not going to get much more into it than I could, though.
Yeah, no, so I was just curious, you know, getting back to the sort of the dramaturgy of your play, you know, you found inspiration in Thornton Wilder's Our Town in terms of sort of at least the opening, you know, third of the play has that very much feels like Our Town in terms of describing the layout of the town and everything. I'm curious to know if there were any other plays or writers that directly influenced 26 Pebbles, but also, you know, just generally your work.
Oh, with 26 Pebbles, I would say that, like, the influence, like you said, is Our Town, because when I drove into Newtown, everything is so idyllic and perfect with the White Steeple Church, the General Store, the big giant flagpole, massive American flag. I don't think I've ever seen a bigger one, honestly, in my life. It's right at the center of town. Right away, it just felt so perfect and so, like, Disney-esque, like they built it. And so I just thought of Our Town. I was like, oh, Grover's Corner is this perfect little place where something terrible happens, and we, you know, it gives us the rest of our play. And I thought, well, could you imagine if, like, a mass shooting of the scale of what we see in 2018 or then 2012 happened in Grover's Corners? And that kind of set me off on a framework path. That's when I knew it was going to be a play. Mm. That's when I went, oh, this is going to be a play. I know what it is now. So that was an influence. Obviously, you know, Moises and Tectonic and Laramie, I mean, for sure. Laramie was the big thing when I was in high school. That's why it's still so, I will never get over this, and I should never get over this. It's very humbling, but the fact that now, at this point, this past year, there's been 53 productions of 26 Pebbles, high schools and colleges around the country, and it's becoming that thing that I remember Laramie being, you know, and these kids that, you know, write me on social media, Mr. Ulloa, and I'm like, who the hell is Mr. Ulloa? My name's Eric. It's so weird. It's so weird. But, you know, knowing that these kids are finding a passion in something that is of their time. In my time, it was the fact that we were fighting for equality. We were fighting for hate crime laws. I mean, the basics, you know, back then in 1997. And now these kids are fighting for their lives. Influence-wise with other playwrights, it's funny. I never look up to any certain playwright or writer. It's always the piece that speaks to me. There are pieces that just... I'm very drawn to humanity. When I get to sit in a theater and experience a moment of humanity, that's what drives me, and those are the kind of writers that make me go, oh, you know, I just saw The Band's Visit again Wednesday. I work with this TDF mentor group, and we took the kids to go see it, and it was my second time seeing it, and I was like, oh, my God, this show is such a freaking, like, perfect slice of 90 minutes of humanity, just, like, as still as life can be and as beautiful as moments of simple connection are. That's my inspiration, like, passing through the musical I did the book for, which will open, it opens at Goodspeed Musicals this July,
2019.
Thank you. Yeah. It's about humanity. It's about a true story, NPR story I listened to. On the way leaving Newtown, I listened to This American Life story. Wow. I held on to it because I had a lot of feelings when it came on. And I thought, this will be something one day. And now it's this musical about a young man who, at 23, left college and didn't know what he wanted to do. He was like, I don't know what I want to do. I don't know what I want to be or what is this country even about? How are we all connected? And so he's like, I can't just jump into it. I got to figure this out. And so he set off from Philadelphia to California on foot with a sign saying walking to listen. And he walked the country. And it's this amazing story about our country at its best, the connections, how we move through the wounds and the scars that we all have through oppression, racism, all these things, and about a young man who's finding himself and also reinvesting into a very painful past he had with a father who left their family. It's an amazing story of humanity. I think humanity is always my answer.
Yeah.
Well, and it also, it's very much like what 26 Pebbles is about. It's about humanity. It's obviously a theme that you like to write about.
You know, people are really fascinating.
They are. People are wonderful and they're horrible. Yeah. I have one final question for you, and it's a question we ask everyone. What was that first show that you saw that did it for you? That gave you the theater bug?
That got me into it. Okay, so this is so random. Get ready for this
show.
We
love random.
Oh, this is real random. So I was skipping class. Kids, stay in school. Don't skip class. I was skipping class at high school, and I was 15, 16, and I didn't know where to go. I was like, oh, crap, why didn't I go to fourth period? And so I snuck into the back of the auditorium in the school, and they were rehearsing for the school musical, and no one could see me, but I watched an hour and a half of Little Abner.
Yeah.
Jubilation T. Cornpone.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Old Toot Your Own Hornpone. That got me into it. And I remember I watched it, I went, wait, I want to do that. Wait a minute. I can do that. I'm doing that. And the next thing I know, I watched the Evita film when it came out. I remember I showed up at the first audition for school the next year with a bandana tied around my neck and a denim shirt and sang, Oh, What a Circus. And I got cast in Fame, the play version.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness. All because you cut class, my hero.
All because I cut class.
Thank you.
It was my pleasure. I love this podcast.
Thank you.
I'm like a nerd for it.
And I have a thing about voices. I love your voice.
Thank you.
It's a good voice.
And go ahead and Google him because he's a pretty handsome fellow.
Oh, now you're just dreamy. I'm blushing.
I don't know what he looks like.
No, utterly dreamy.
Drink of
water. I'm matching the pink walls.
The country's in the very best of hands. Treasury says the national debt is climbing to the sky, and government expenditures have never been so high. It makes a fella get a gleam of pride within his eye to see how our economy expands. The country's in the very best of hands. The country's in the very best of hands.
Rob here with You May Be Wondering. Following our very sobering conversation with Eric about the epidemic of gun violence that plagues our country, you may be wondering, well, what can I do about it? While it's easy to feel helpless in the face of such horror, the good news is there's actually a lot that you can do. First and foremost, vote. That may sound really simple, but the reality is that public policy made by elected officials at all levels of government has the greatest power to stem the tide of gun violence. I mean, just look at countries around the world or states across America that have taken strong steps towards gun reform. The evidence is clear. So, next time you go to the ballot box in a general election or a primary, do your research beforehand to make sure you know where the candidates stand on sensible gun violence prevention measures and vote for the ones who will make a difference. A second thing you can do is join an organization that is on the front lines of building a national movement for gun violence prevention. In the aftermath of Sandy Hook, that community came together to launch Sandy Hook Promise, which is organizing in communities all across the country to develop and deliver mental health and wellness programs, but also advocating for state and federal policy reform. Another amazing organization is Every Town for Gun Safety, founded by former New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg. Every Town has brought together Moms for Moms Demand Action, mayors of cities, survivors of mass shootings and daily gun violence, and allies nationwide to become an important counterbalance to the insidious power and influence of the NRA. And it's worked. Candidates supported by Every Town are winning elections, while the NRA is going bankrupt. And Every Town is every day helping to shape the national conversation about this issue. Other great organizations include the Brady Campaign, the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, and the Giffords Law Center, which was founded by former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, who, as you might remember, was shot in 2011. And of course, there's March for Our Lives, which was created by the kids from Parkland. Gun violence affects every strata of society, but it unfortunately disproportionately affects people of color and marginalized communities. African Americans are 10 times more likely to die by gun violence than white Americans. Gun violence is the leading cause of death in black teens and children. And 2017 was the deadliest year on record for the trans community. Many of those murders were gun deaths. So, together, the organizations I've mentioned and countless others are coming together and amping up pressure on elected officials to stop taking donations from the NRA and start taking affirmative measures via legislation, but also executive action, regulation, and enforcement so that everyone can live their lives without fear of being killed by a gun. As we discussed, large swaths of the American people, even including large numbers of NRA members, support common sense things like comprehensive background checks, an assault weapons ban, raising the age limit on gun purchasers, 3-day waiting periods, banning bump stocks and high-capacity magazines. Most people don't want guns in schools, or heaven forbid, 3D-printed guns. And yet, most people also don't think anything will change. You may be wondering the same. I feel that way sometimes, too. But one thing is for sure. Nothing will change if we don't do something. So, do something. Eric wrote a play. You can vote. Call out your elected officials. Donate to a good organization. Start a club at your school or church. March. Tweet. Stay angry. Stay horrified. Demand action. Because your life, or the life of someone you love, could very well depend on it. Rob here. That's our show. Thanks for listening. You can hear us anytime on iTunes. The Fabulous Invalid is a production of O&M Etc. and the Fabulous Invalid LLC. Our theme music is by Lucky Chops. Today's episode was edited and engineered by Aaron Kaufman. Find us online at thefabulousinvalid.com and on social media at Fabulous Invalid. And be sure to tune in next Wednesday.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No,
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.